Measuring yourself is easy in some respects, like your age, your height, your weight, but not so easy in others, like your character, integrity, and maturity. But those are the real measurements we should be focusing on. Your quantitative info doesn't define who you are, it's your qualitative info that does. But growth doesn't just happen. It takes intentional accountability on your part. So welcome to The Measuring Post, a place where we can learn and grow together.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Measuring Post. My name is Joe Massa, the host of The Measuring Post, and today we are going to talk to somebody that has been in my network for a while, but I've never really gotten to the very bottom of her story other than just a few pre-interview conversations. But she's a true inspiration, not only to me, but to a lot of people in our network. She did something very awesome. She took control of her own health. She lost some weight due to some physical limitations. She was dealing with some plantar fasciitis. I think I'm saying that right. Close enough. Feels like there's too many S's in there. But she started with that. There was some underlying reasons why she wanted to get healthy, other than just the obvious of it's important to take care of your body. She's also dealing with a mother that's going through some health issues that was also part of the motivation for her to get healthy. So I'll let her explain all of that for now. But to my right is Miss Brooke Costinas. Thank you so much for joining me on The Measuring Post.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be asked.
Yeah, I'm glad you answered my email or my Facebook message. So, you know, I've been seeing your story and following along on Facebook for quite a while now, and I'll let you get into the nitty-gritty about what you've accomplished so far for your own health. But then in turn, you're also helping people get healthy and take control of their life and their dietary needs and losing weight and helping them keep it off. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, what motivated you to get healthy yourself and what you're doing to help people around you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2019, and that was about November. And not too long after that, you know, we had COVID. And so I'm kind of an emotional eater. So I was really just kind of packing on the weight. I kind of ate my way through 2020 and part of 2021. And so by 2021, I was like over 200 pounds, and I'm 5'4". So it was pretty painful on my small frame. And so I had just a lot of joint pain and back pain. And then you mentioned my plantar fasciitis. And yeah, it got to the point where I was just really struggling to walk, and I couldn't do any of the normal things that I was doing. So I really knew that I had some work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that from our previous conversations, you also mentioned that although maybe not directly linked, or there's not that exact correlation, but the overweight also can lead in or increase odds of Alzheimer's yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I started doing research right around that same time and realized that all of the things that I had going on in my life were actually kind of direct correlations. There's no cure for Alzheimer's, but there are definitely things that you can do to decrease your odds of having it. And so I started researching, and I'm like, oh gosh, I've got to do something. And so right around that time, I reached out to my coach. I had been watching her on Facebook, and she had lost 75 pounds and kept it off for like 4 years. And I was like, okay, I got to find out what she's doing. And so I reached out, and I started on my program in July of 2021. And from July to January, I was able to lose 60 pounds. And it was just amazing. I mean, it changed my whole entire outlook on everything. I really was experiencing a lot of emotion. You know, we'll probably get into that a little bit later in the conversation. But with my mom being diagnosed, I was just really kind of in a depression. And going through this journey really helped me just increase my mental stamina and ability to deal with all of the hard things that I was going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you said it best, is there is also an emotional angle to it. And that does play into the decision first to get healthy, but also I bet the reward was that much better, because I would imagine that it had a profoundly positive effect on your mental state as well.
It really did. It made a huge difference. I mean, that mindset piece. What I learned really through my program was that losing weight is something that obviously is really important, but there's just this whole picture of health that has a whole lot of other components to it. You know, sleep is important, and maintaining lower stress levels is really important. And all of those things really play into our overall health and can really decrease our chance of getting some of those bad diseases that we're hoping to kind of stave off. And I read a statistic today that actually 40% of dementia cases can be either slowed or even maybe prevented if people make serious changes to their lifestyle and really are making those healthy choices for themselves.
Yeah, that's a pretty impressive stat. And I definitely would advise people to take that very seriously, because as we'll get into later, as someone that's currently going through experiencing Alzheimer's, on the end where you're watching a loved one go through it, it's devastating. And I've known other people that have witnessed a family member, even a significant other, go through those. And there's no preparing you for something of that magnitude. But do you think it's more related to diet? Is what you consume as important, or is it just sort of like a holistic approach of everything altogether?
I would say it starts with diet. That's probably the first place. I mean, you know, you always hear that phrase like abs are made in the kitchen. And it really is true that what you eat has a huge impact on your overall health. And so, you know, my diet kind of consists of higher lean protein amounts, and lots of veggies. I do have some healthy fats and some whole grains and things like that. But I try to keep it mostly low sugar. I think there's kind of a lot of stigma around the word diet. You know, the people are kind of scared of that word. But the truth is, everyone is on a diet. It might be a pizza and French fry diet, but it's a diet nonetheless. And so everybody eats. And so I think, you know, when people kind of take away that stigma of, oh, I'm just looking really at what I'm eating and trying to balance that out. One of the things that my coach said to me early on in my health journey was that you should have cake on your birthday, but not every day is your birthday. And that really stuck to me, because yeah. I'm like, oh gosh, before my plan, I was eating like I was on vacation all the time. And so there's a time and a place to eat, you know, the things that we really love that maybe are not the best choices for us and don't always line up with our health. But, you know, there's a time for that for sure. But we want to make sure that overall we're looking at that balance and making sure that the majority of our choices are heading us in a positive direction, as opposed to taking us down, you know, the disease path. And once I started losing weight, I really wanted to exercise. And so I started incorporating that. I do think movement is really important. And especially as we're getting a little bit older, you know, we start losing, I think, about 10% of our muscle mass each decade after age 30. And so keeping that muscle mass really intact is very important for us as we age, to just be able to do regular daily tasks. So I use amino acids when I'm working out to build muscle and to also help with recovery. And so those kinds of things are really important, I think. And my next goal, because I've always got to have a next goal, is to incorporate some strength training, because I have been reading a lot lately about how important that is to really build that muscle as we get older.
Yeah. And a lot of people always think of exercise as like, you got to go hit the bike or the treadmill for 4 hours a day. And realistically, there's many, many studies out there that show that strength training is actually better at burning calories, because mm-hmm. muscle burns more calories than having fat on your body. So it's really good to incorporate some strength training. But also, I want to touch back on what you said about the diet. Like, we all are on a diet. I like that you put it that way, because, you know, everyone's like, well, the keto diet or the paleo or the Mediterranean diet, and these things that people don't stay consistent with. So you might do really great in the beginning, because mm-hmm. your body wants to shed that excess amount of pounds, but then people gain it right back. I know I've certainly done that over the years, when I was heavier than I wanted to be and I would go on a crazy diet that was really restrictive, and I couldn't stick with it long term because it's not feasible to restrict everything you like forever, because eventually you're going to slip and that cheat meal turns into a cheat weekend, into a, well, let's just go back to the free for all. So really it's the diet is more just like, it's real simple, really. It, obviously you want to eat healthier things, but calories in versus calories out is kind of the simplest way to do it, but not all calories are created equal either. So, yeah, I like the lean proteins, the veggies, that sort of simple carbohydrates, but you know, I think people are always kind of terrified of fat and carbohydrates, but those are really important macronutrients for your health and your overall system and all your organs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I also have learned is to really look at the glycemic index. And that's one of the things that, you know, looking at making sure that I'm trying to do all the things that I can do to prevent myself from having Alzheimer's or other diseases is to really limit my sugar. And so you think about even fruit, you know, fruit is healthy for us, but if you look at the glycemic index, there are some fruits that have a lot more sugar than others. And so berries, for example, are really low on the glycemic index as opposed to say watermelon and pineapple, which we kind of call the party fruits in my program because they really are fruits that maybe shouldn't be eaten on a daily basis just because they are so high in sugar. And you're thinking like, oh, I mean, before my program, I was eating pineapple and cottage cheese for my breakfast, thinking like, oh, I'm getting a healthy breakfast in every day. But really, I was loading myself up with sugar right from the get-go. So just thinking about little tweaks like that, or even like using sourdough bread versus white bread, those things really can make a huge difference, those little tiny tweaks or little exchanges. I don't eat buns with my burgers, just little things like that that I've kind of incorporated as habits over time.
Yeah. And one thing that was like eye opening to me originally when I was losing some weight back a few years ago, when I was really into getting my health back, is sauces. My wife, especially, she's a sauce queen, but like those little sauces, that little squirt of ketchup, that little barbecue sauce, you don't realize it. It is loaded with empty calories and tons of sugar. And although they're extremely tasty, that's something that you can easily switch out and save some calories and sugar there. And the sugary drinks, obviously, you know, whether it's a soda or even like Gatorades and things, you go, well, it's a sports drink. Well, yeah, but it's like literally all sugar and food coloring. So might taste good, but those are about some of those empty calories that we can eliminate that not only can help maybe prevent overweight and like things like Alzheimer's, but again, to mention my wife on her side of the family, like diabetes is pretty common.
Yeah.
So that's something that you definitely have to consider. Your sugar intake is directly correlated to those sort of higher level illnesses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're so right. And those sauces really can add up super fast. You're eating a salad and you think like, oh, I'm eating something healthy. But if you're covering it in dressing, then, you know, now you've added a lot of calories and fat that you didn't plan on having. So drinks and sauces are definitely places to tighten up things.
Yeah, it's like putting a milkshake on your salad.
Yes,
it's so tasty, true. But you know, it's not good for the overall health benefits of it. It's funny because for a while I was using like the MyFitnessPal app or like calorie counting, and I would go somewhere and order a salad, and then you're putting all the ingredients in. It's like, that's a 2,900 calorie salad. And I'm like, well, I guess I should have got the cheeseburger because, man, it was less calories than that. So yeah, it's amazing how quick those things stack up when you're not really thinking about them that way.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
Well, this kind of leads us into the next. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that restaurants, you know, you mentioned going out and I do still go out, you know, to eat and everything. But it's interesting to me how a lot of times the healthy option on the menu is actually the rarity as opposed to the non-healthy options, you know, in a restaurant. And so it's kind of a bummer that our society is set up to be that way a little bit. But when you are on a weight loss journey, one of the best things you can do is to plan ahead and look at the menu before you get there. And I even have taken my own dressing and things like that with me because then I know for sure what's in what I'm putting on my salads. So those are just some little tips. You know, restaurants are super usually accommodating at making any changes that you might have. I've even asked for chopped up bell peppers instead of chips at Mexican restaurants and things like that. So don't be afraid to ask when you are at a restaurant if you want to make some healthier changes.
Yeah, that's great advice. And also just be aware that obviously eating out consistently is not good anyways for your wallet, but not good for your health. And a part of that is how they prepare the food and the type of oils they cook it in, and whether sodium. It's deep fried versus air fried. Like, there is a difference in how you prepare your food that can add hundreds up to thousands of calories more if you're preparing it in deep fried lard as opposed to like an air fryer. So cooking at home and learning those skills and techniques on how to prepare healthier meals or steaming things way, way more healthy for you overall than going out to go, you know, eat at a restaurant, even if it's the healthy option.
Absolutely. Yes.
So that kind of leads me into another thing. I love how you've taken your health journey so public. When we do release this episode, I'll put Brooke's links to her Instagram and Facebook around so you can connect with her, because she really is amazing at what she does. And I like how you share all of this openly with people that are interested in losing weight, and you celebrate the wins with your clients and friends that are doing the program with you. But you've also been really open with your experience of Alzheimer's with your mother, which I think, even though it's really tough to share, and I see in some of your videos just the raw emotion that comes through, and you know, you have the good days with mom and the bad days, and some days you just want to crawl into a hole. And But I think by you sharing that, you open up and kind of lift the stigma up about this disease. And it's been eye-opening to me because I've never seen it firsthand other than just, you know, through other acquaintances. So if you don't mind, go through kind of a day in the life with mom and, you know, what you're doing to sort of just be there with her in these tough times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really have been fortunate to be able to be so open about both of my journeys. And I have met so many people through both my health journey and my Alzheimer's journey that I never would have connected with before. And so that really has been very fulfilling and helped my mental health, because I have people reaching out who are going through Alzheimer's with a loved one too, and they don't know where to start. I mean, it's very overwhelming when you first get that diagnosis. You really just don't even know where to begin or what to do to prepare. It's like, you know that this thing is coming and there's nothing you can do, and it just feels like a freight train headed for you. So, I mean, right now my mom is in a memory care facility. She was living at home with my stepdad, and he was, you know, taking care of her and doing his best, and it just got to a point where she didn't know who he was, and she didn't know that her house was her home. And it was really fascinating, actually, because she would give me turn by turn directions to get to her house, and then we would get there and she would say, "This is not the place." And so she was always packing to go home, and you know, we got to a point where we had no choice. And so we had to move her into a memory care facility, which was really a difficult decision, because when she was diagnosed, she really was adamant that she did not want to go into a facility. And so there was some guilt definitely associated with that, that my stepdad and I have gone through, that she didn't want this, but we didn't have any other options. And so we did what was best for her. And now she's being taken care of well by the facility. And they meet all of her needs and make sure she gets her meds. And she has a very structured daily schedule, which really is what's best for her.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point that I didn't even consider, is the guilt you feel as the daughter or the husband or family member that has to make that decision. It's almost like the taking them off life support decision, you know, because you're doing something, you know, that you wouldn't want or they didn't want, but it is in their best interest. And obviously, if she's getting to the point where she's confused about where she is and who she's with, it's a danger probably to her, and maybe make an irrational decision, something that could cause a greater harm than good.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when she first was diagnosed, I mean, it was really hard. We were all devastated, obviously, and just really angry, because we just kind of felt like this future had been rewritten that we had planned on. And she went through a lot of depression. And at the time, we were actually kind of locked down for COVID. And it was really confusing to her because she didn't understand why her friends weren't visiting and why we weren't visiting. And she would get really upset. And but, you know, right around that time was when I started my health program. And I just started looking for the positives instead of being upset and trying to have fun with her. And, you know, we would dance and I would take her to the mall and we would be silly. And we planned a bunch of trips. And so we really just tried to make the most of the time that we could as she was declining and just spending as much time as possible together as a family. So I treasure those moments because if you think about it, had she, you know, had a different trajectory, we may not have spent that kind of quality time together if she had not had that diagnosis. And so it ended up in some strange way being a bit of a blessing because we really were intentional about making that time and spending that time together. And now we have those memories and the pictures and all of that that we can look back on and really treasure.
Yeah, and I think that's a great perspective. Dealing with something as horrible and overwhelming as Alzheimer's, but that's a really unique perspective, is that it forced you, not necessarily forced you, but maybe catapulted you into more intentional time spending that you wouldn't have done. And I think that's something that I wouldn't even have considered unless I was in that moment. But again, I guess, you know, when you got someone going through an illness, a cancer or something, like, you know, that the clock is ticking, the biological clock, as opposed to somebody that just goes to sleep and never wakes up, you know, where you just had no idea and you missed it. And then you have that sort of regret, like, well, I wish I would have had more time. And this, you did get to make those decisions. And I love that. And the pictures and the memories that you'll be able to take with you forever. So that's a really cool way to think about it. But currently, how is she holding up as far as, you know, how developed is her stages of Alzheimer's? Where is she at in this journey? Is there any sort of, you know, progression she's making on a positive note, or has it been pretty steady decline?
Yeah, it's been a pretty steady decline. She is really at the point now where she doesn't have much, I would say, cognition left. She doesn't recognize pretty much anybody, but there are occasional moments where she'll look at me and there will be this like lighting up of her face, or she'll say, you know, she'll tell me she loves me, or she'll call me honey or something. And then I know that she has connected with me for that moment. And then immediately after, it might be gone. So sometimes when I walk in, or my son and I come in, she looks right past us and walks right by, and we have to stop her and say, "Hey, we're here to visit you." And so that's really hard. But you know, we just make the best of it and try to have as much time with her as we can. We go and visit as often as we can. My son, he's 17 and he goes to visit her on his own, which I love. They had a really special relationship, and he has kind of gained these skills, I guess, or kind of qualities to be able to empathize and be at the facility. It's still not easy for him because, I mean, it's kind of a three-ring circus there sometimes because you never know what you're going to get when you go. But, you know, we laugh and you kind of have to laugh through this journey and find those moments because there are things that are really funny and things that happen that you have to giggle at. And then, you know, it helps because if you don't laugh, sometimes you're going to cry. And I cry too. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of hard times and days where I leave her after visiting and it was just a really hard visit and I cry in my car and then I kind of move through the emotions and then keep going. But it's complicated for sure. Complicated feelings.
Yeah, it's almost like going through the stages of grief while they're still around. You do have to go through the denial and the acceptance and the anger and a lot of those emotions that usually don't happen until after they've passed on. So, I can imagine that's very difficult. And I've seen some of those videos of you being very candid and crying in your car. And it's heart-wrenching, you know, because it's one of those things that, like, it's really tough when the person's body is still working fully and they're not quite there upstairs. So you're seeing them do things they would normally do, but they're just not connecting the dots. And honestly, vice versa, I've known some people that actually had like the ALS and family members where their brain was fully functioning, but their body was completely not. So it's like, opposite sides of that coin, but I can't imagine, your feeling just kind of watching that and not really being able to, almost like a helpless feeling, like there's nothing you can do to kind of reawaken her memory. But I like that your mentality is, just to work through it and to just be there for her and laugh with her. And when she does have those moments of clarity, just really soaking up that quality time, because that's something that she might not remember, right afterwards, but you and your son and hopefully other people that visit her get to remember those moments and cherish her in those sort of scenarios. So, yeah, it's heartbreaking, but I think you handle it with such grace, and I love how you've made it a personal point to really try to take back your health to maybe prevent this for yourself somewhere down the line. So I'm not 100% sure. I should have looked this up, but I'm assuming this is probably a bit hereditary as well. Does this run in your family?
It can be, but my mom is actually the first person in our family that has had it. So, it's really hard to tell at this point. The research is very conflicted. There are definitely, like we talked about before, certain factors that can make a difference that seem to lend themselves to maybe a higher risk of getting Alzheimer's, like the weight and the movement and high blood pressure, high stress, some of those kinds of things, smoking, drinking, all of those things can lend themselves to it. And there can also be a genetic component, but there are, I think at this point, just so many potential factors that they really can't narrow it down to, do this and you won't get it. So I don't know. I mean, at this point, I feel like having watched my mom go through this, certainly it's a big fear of mine that I would have to go through the same thing. And so that is a motivation for me to keep my health in focus and in check, but also to live my life to the fullest and, really just kind of try and do all that I can to enjoy whatever time I have, because any of us could be gone tomorrow. And so that this journey has just really helped me to frame my thinking as far as, when she was diagnosed, I was so sad all the time. And I realized this is going to be a really long journey, and I can be sad for a decade of my life, or I can find ways to deal with it and still find time to be happy. And I think so. I read about something called glimmers, and glimmers is like the opposite of a trigger. So a glimmer is just this little micro moment of happiness that maybe you see a rainbow, or thankfully living in Colorado, we get to see the mountains every day, and just little tiny things like that that might bring you this little burst of joy. And so that's helped me a lot, because I've realized that you really can live with dual feelings at the same time. I can be really sad about something that happened about my mom, but then see something and have this burst of joy. So, kind of being able to realize that we can feel more than one feeling at one time is important, I think.
I think that is my new favorite term, is glimmers. I like that. I've never heard that. And I think that is total perspective right there. Like, everyone always looks for the bad, or notices the bad. Maybe they don't look for it, but it's really easy to be like, oh, always woe is me. But those little tiny things, even, yeah, just like a butterfly, a rainbow, or just a beautiful mountain or a sunset, those are things that we so often take for granted because they're just like, who cares? It's a butterfly. Like, but really, if you just give it that 1 second to appreciate just the nature and beauty of it, maybe can pull you out of a dark place. So I like that. Always look for the glimmers, guys. That's the new motto for this show. I think that was pretty cool. So obviously, I would imagine that you are looking for those more and more as you go further down this journey. But I have a question just out of ignorance, because I don't really know a whole lot about Alzheimer's. Does this like have a huge physical aspect to it, like as far as her ability to do physical things, or does that decline her body as much as it does the mind, or is it more specifically for her mind?
It will. You know, different people are affected in different ways. Some of the people in her facility who have memory loss are have maybe a stronger memory, but have more physical impacts. And for her, she is better physically. Like, she is really strong. She walks a ton. I wish I could put a Fitbit on her and she wouldn't lose it, because she walks so many steps every day. And so physically she's doing better, I would say, whereas mentally she has almost no kind of thought processes, and she talks in what we call word salad. And so the words are kind of all jumbled up and, you know, don't make a lot of sense. But if you really listen carefully to her intonation, you can sometimes kind of catch a line and respond in a way that she is kind of satisfied with. But so eventually, yes, her physical body will start to go too, because basically with Alzheimer's, it's just all of the neurons and connections in the brain start to shrink and die. And so she must have more of her communication and memory centers affected at this point, but eventually the walking and talking and eating, feeding herself, stuff like that. She's starting to eat a little bit less and sleep a little bit more. And so eventually those kinds of physical things will start to take over too.
Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily is there like a time frame on like usually start to finish, or like an average, like how long it takes somebody, or is that very personal? Everyone's kind of unique and, you know, there's no real time frame for it. So she could live for another 10, 15 years with this, or 10 to 15 weeks. So is it kind of that sort of?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, she's in hospice care right now. You know, so hypothetically that would be 6 months, but with Alzheimer's, she's in the last phase. There's seven stages of Alzheimer's and she's in the last stage, but within the seventh stage, there's sub stages A through E. And so each of those sub stages could potentially take, like you said, weeks to months to years. And so we don't really know. And even the doctors, it's hard to say. And of course she could slip and fall and that would change things, or she could stop eating. It's really just, it's very, a very personal journey for different people. So yeah, it's hard to know. And that is hard because, it's not a quality of life that she has anymore. And so to think about her living this way for another 5-10 years is really hard on my heart, for sure. So just try to take it day by day and week by week, and all of a sudden a year has passed, you know? So, but yeah, the timeline is really tricky with Alzheimer's.
Yeah. So I know just from your online, you know, sharing of this. So the last stage, they actually call the end of life care stage. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So, and you're saying that's broken down from A to E. Do they have any sort of inclination of where on that level she is? Is she in more of the A or closer to E, or?
Yeah, I think she's closer to maybe like a D or E. She basically, the things that she has that they are looking for at this point for her to start declining in are whether she's still eating, whether she is still walking, whether she can still talk, even though right now her words aren't really holding meaning, she's still saying quite a few words. So those are kind of some of the next, I think the next stage is like she could only say six words or something like that. And then after that, it's like you can't hold your head up or you can't hold your body up. So the next stages will be kind of the physical ones. But so far, she's still physically strong. And, you know, there are some people who are still walking and then they just really take a drastic decline. And so it's hard to know.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that's extremely difficult to witness. And obviously the uncertainty of it all, I know that we all have uncertainty about, you know, how long our lives will be or how we go. And I think for most of us, you would want that uncertainty. I don't know, want to know the day I die or how, or, you know, because that would take the life out of you. But as a family member watching someone go down this path, you can't help but be cognizant of what is coming next, even though your mom might, or whoever you're watching might not understand that. So, you know, based on that, like, and obviously I think we all know what you will say, but what words of advice would you tell someone in the beginning of this stage that they're watching mom or dad or a husband or wife go through this journey? Like, what's something that you wish someone would have told you on day one that maybe would have kind of helped you process a little better?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I have some practical things that I would say, and then some sort of more emotional things. Practically, I would say if you get a diagnosis or you think you're going to, set up a meeting with an elder lawyer if you can, because we really needed to put some things in place early, to make sure that, say, we changed my stepdad's power of attorney and set up the will, looking at asset protection and, you know, potentially setting up a trust for your finances is really helpful because there's a 5-year waiting period for any kind of irrevocable trust. And memory care is expensive. We are paying $8,000 a month for her memory care. And so it's and that's all private pay. There's no insurance or any kind of help for that. The only way that you get help for memory care is if you either have long-term care insurance or if you are on Medicaid, in which case there's only certain facilities that take Medicaid and you can only have a certain amount of money if you're single or if you're a couple. So there's just a lot of things that I had to learn that I just had no idea about going into this journey. And then even looking into memory care facilities, there's different types of facilities. There's different ways that they structure their pay. So just really kind of doing some of that research. Alzheimer's.org is an excellent resource that you can call. They have a 24-hour hotline that you can call and get somebody, and they will send you all kinds of resources and articles, and just they were a huge help for us in the very beginning because we really did not know where to start. And, you know, my mom was so she was very resistant to talking about the future and talking about potentially going into memory care. She was like, nope, I'm not going to. And so they wouldn't talk about it, and it made it really hard to plan for it. So just kind of doing that research on my own so that I knew what to do when the time came was really helpful. So that's kind of the practical side of it. And then as far as emotionally, just be patient, so patient. Because they don't know that they're forgetting. And so when my mom would ask the same question over and over and over again, or I mean, one time she asked me like 20 times within 3 days what I wanted for my birthday, and it feels in the moment frustrating, or she started calling me like 20, 30 times a day, and she didn't remember that she had talked to me already that many times. And so at first I was so frustrated, and I just was like, oh my gosh, she's calling me again. But then it was like, you know, at some point the phone's going to go silent. And it did. I mean, she doesn't even know what a phone is anymore, much less know how to use it. And so I started answering every call that I could and just saying, hey, I'm at work right now, I'll call you back. And then she might call me 20 minutes later. Hey, I'm at work right now, I'll call you back. And I'm a teacher, so I told my students, like, hey, this is what's going on. And they were so sweet and understanding about that. I just did the best I could to try to meet her where she was at, because I think we kind of want to try to bring them back to our reality and say, like, oh, remember, I already told you that, or remember we went there last year, and they don't remember. So saying that doesn't do them any good. And so just really trying to go to their reality and live there with them instead of trying to bring them back to ours, I think is one of my biggest pieces of advice. And, you know, just try to maintain their dignity, because it's pretty awful. And with any disease, as you age and you get older, I mean, you think about these people that were lawyers or judges, or my mom was a supervisor and she was in charge of everything. And now she needs everything done for her. And so just kind of trying to remember that these are people who had fulfilling lives and did amazing things. And yes, they need help now, but they still deserve that respect and that care and keeping that dignity intact as much as possible. So, and I mentioned earlier, but definitely laugh. You have to laugh about some of the crazy stuff that they say or do. Or, I mean, even mom would laugh. Sometimes she would say something and we would just start cracking up. So try to laugh when you can.
Yeah, I love that. I think both of those pieces of advice are very sound. Obviously, the practical advice of get your ducks in a row as far as legally, financially, everything you can to try to protect not only assets, but make sure that the right person is making the decisions on behalf of them, you know, getting the power of attorney, medical power of attorney. And those do take time. Those are not like you just fill out an application and it's done by Monday. So yeah, definitely have those processes in your mind if you ever deal with something this. But I love the emotional piece you said, the be patient, because a good friend of my family's, his mom is going through Alzheimer's as well. And she's pretty advanced also. And that was one of the things he told me. He said, it's just the patience. Like, same thing. It's so easy to get frustrated because you're assuming that she understands what you're doing every day, but they don't. And it's something that if you don't be patient with them, you'll regret it, because all of a sudden you're snapping on somebody that absolutely has zero control over that. So I really love that. And I would even add also, look for those glimmers, those little glimmers. So yeah, laugh with the little things, because, you know, I think what you said was very powerful. At some point the phone will go silent and you'll wish that you had a call coming in that you could be frustrated about, because you'll miss it. And, yeah, you know, just the way that any parent, when they go, or any family member, that once they pass, there's no going back. And that's the one thing we always forget. We always trade our time for dollars and for these self, you know, fulfilling things that we think are going to make us happy. But we don't realize that our true asset in life is that time itself. And we can't get the minutes back. We can't get the days back. So I love that you're just cherishing those moments and making these memories. And even like you said a while back, just like doing the intentional spending of time with somebody, because you knew that you were going to lose those moments. So
yeah. And take the pictures, I think in our day-to-day lives, take the videos.
Yeah. And I think in our day-to-day lives, we could all be better at just being more intentional about spending time with people we care about. Cause that's something that it's really easy to be like, I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to see him, or no, I don't want to go to the park with you cause you're my 10-year-old daughter, but I don't want to go right now. And it's like, no, you should, you know, don't miss those moments, cause you can't get those moments back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if people want to get in touch with you, obviously you do the health training stuff. We'll put your Facebook and Instagram links up, but have you found like any sort of relief or like community with the Alzheimer's community? Is there like support groups that you're a part of or recommend, or is that something that just really hasn't been on your radar, but it's available?
You know, I really have connected with people through sharing my journey. And so many people have reached out to me that I kind of now have a network of people who are going through something similar. And we've kind of been able to support each other. And I also have some other daughters of residents at my mom's facility that I have really made a bond with. And we keep in touch and kind of look out for each other's parents, which is nice because, you know, if I can only get over there a couple times a week, I know that someone else is checking on my mom and I do the same for them. So that's been really helpful. I for personally, and I think support groups can be great depending on what you're going through, but I found the support groups to be more hard on my mental health than helpful because I was hearing all of these stories of people and what they were going through. And then they started sharing these things that I never had even considered would be things that I would have to deal with. And I kind of wasn't ready to process that. And some of the things that hasn't even happened with my mom, but you know, I've had different stuff. And so the support groups did not end up being super helpful to me, but I have done personal talk therapy with, you know, my own therapist, and that's really been helpful. And then just really leaning into my health coaching community, my school community where I work, and all of the people that love and care for me there, my friends and family. I have several aunts and uncles and you know, my dad and stepmom. And so those people have all been really, really helpful for me as far as just a support system. And one really kind of nice piece is that my mom has several friends who have continued to go and visit her. And so then they always give me an update after they go see her, and I've kept in contact with them. And so keeping in touch with the people that also love my mom has been really sort of fulfilling and beneficial to me because, you know, when you love the same person, you just kind of bond over that connection. So that's been really cool.
Yeah, and I really like that angle of it because also you get to hear stories and things that maybe you never knew about your mom. And, you know, they have a different perspective where they weren't the daughter, they were the friend. And, oh, your mom was crazy back then and we had so much fun. And, you know, some of those yeah. old stories that you maybe never would have heard are really probably heartwarming and just really refreshing to hear. And, yeah, it's you know, some people might really like the more tried and true traditional support groups, but you know, whatever support system makes sense for you and your mental health and your well-being obviously is the one that I would recommend also as well. And whether that's your school community, your work community, I like that you have that sort of fellowship with the other daughters because it's nice to have somebody there that can pick up your slack a little bit if you're gone and vice versa. And you know, you can't be everywhere all the time and make things work. So that's pretty cool that you guys do that.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, Brooke, I think that you're a truly inspirational person. I think the way that you handle this, not only with how you deal with your mom, is it's very inspirational and really refreshing to see your strength and your courage and your willingness to share this journey with a bunch of random people on Facebook and Instagram. And obviously your friends are paying attention, but it's something that's so important. And that's really the whole reason I started this podcast in the first place was sharing these stories. You never know who might hear it. This opens up their mind, their heart, their, you know, maybe just change their perspective on something. And not only is it important to take care of your own health, but at some point you're going to be faced with someone you love that's going through a journey that you can't fix. You can't change. All you can do is be there and support and learn and grow and help. So I think that what you're doing, although I can tell that it's very hard for you to share sometimes, it's truly important. And I thank you so much for being willing to open up your heart and tell your story with us today.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate being on. And I'm happy to help anybody that is going through either memory loss with a loved one, or if you are looking for ways to get healthy, I'm happy to help with that too. So, health is a journey. It's not a destination. And we just have to keep fighting for the next goal and keep trying to get a little bit better all the time.
Yeah. And I like the one thing you said towards the beginning of the conversation was you always got to have the next goal. So don't ever become comfortable or complacent where you're at. Even if you did lose 60 pounds and you're feeling healthy, then go on to the next thing, whether that's strength training or run a marathon or whatever the case is for you. Keep going, keep pushing forward, consistently growing and pushing towards the best version of yourself. So for Brooke, I'm going to put all of her links in this video, around this video. I'll share this on my social media pages when this is released. And also reach out to her, because there's a reason we didn't mention her company today. It's because we want you to talk to Brooke directly, because you really want to get the words and the information from her personally, because otherwise you're missing out on an amazing human with an amazing ability to help you. So Brooke, again, thank you so much for your time on The Measuring Post. It's been an honor to talk to you, and hopefully, you know, maybe somewhere down the line we can have you back and do a follow-up interview with you and just see how things are going in your life and how things are going with maybe your mom's journey, if it's still going at that point, but also your health journey and how you've learned to cope with things where they stand at that time.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Everybody, Brooke Costinas, thank you so much for your time on The Measuring Post.
Thanks.